The carbon to nitrogen ratio differs greatly across livestock species and around what these animals are being fed. It matters because depending upon what that ratio is, the product that results, let's say, for example, compost, can become really good soil amendment. Okay, really good soil amendment. So, for example, if you have a carbon-nitrogen ratio of 18 to 1 and you use manure as the nitrogen source and, let's say, some kind of straw so as a carbon source, if you mix these two at the right ratio, then you will maximize microbial growth.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy-D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. BinSentry, the most trusted feed monitoring solution in the world. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet. The National Pork Board is committed to improving the health of the U.S. swine herd. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org.
Hi there, and welcome to the Swine It podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and today I have as my guest Dr. Frank Mitlerner, professor and air quality CE specialist in the Department of Animal Science at UC Davis. And he's also the director for the CLEAR Center, which is Clarity and Leadership for Environmental Awareness and Research at UC Davis. Welcome to the Swine It podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be discussing livestock sustainability. But before we get started, Dr. Mitlerner, will you give us a bit more about your background? Tell us about your career path, how you came to UC Davis.
Yeah, so I'm a native from Germany, lived there for 27 years and 27 years ago, I came to the States. I had a master in agriculture engineering from Europe and then did my PhD in Texas. And 23 years ago, I started my professor position here at UC Davis. I'm also an extension specialist, and that means not just do I teach students and do research, but I also take that research, those results that we obtain here from our research, and I bring it into the real world to farmers, ranchers, policymakers, the public at large. And you mentioned I'm the director of the CLEAR Center. This is an important part of what I do. It's doing research on sustainability in animal agriculture with postdoctoral fellows, with graduate students, and so forth. That's the one side of the CLEAR Center. And the other side is the comms side, the science communication side, where we take information and share it with the rest of the world. For example, what is soil carbon sequestration? How does an anaerobic digester work? How do cows belch methane? And so forth. Okay, so all those things that people hear about a lot, but generally are not well informed on, are issues that we talk about with our communications team. It's a sizable team, including journalists, filmmakers, social media experts, and so on.
When it comes to raising healthy, strong swine, the environment makes all the difference. Pancopia provides better environmental conditions for swine so that they can grow faster and more efficiently. Grow smarter, grow stronger, and watch your profits soar. Pancopia, the future of swine care starts here. Visit pancopia.com today to learn more.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that. I did check out the website, and I think that's the important part about research and science, right, is to get what we are learning out to the even the general public, but also the farmers and ranchers that are out there, you know, doing the work in agriculture. So I appreciate centers like that, and I think that's a great step to the information sharing that maybe as scientists we didn't always do a good job of.
You know, I think not enough of that is done in general. Okay, many of my colleagues do a wonderful job doing the research and publishing it in peer-reviewed journals, but the majority of people will never see this, okay? And or if they see it, will not understand it because it's written in ways most people will not understand. And if there were one thing where agriculture and our food system really lags behind, it is the issue of communication. This is where we are notoriously weak. Farmers, the entire food sector is notoriously weak in telling its story. And here's where we intersect and help out a little bit by being that voice that does explain things around our animal source foods.
I couldn't agree more. So the reason that we have the Swinet podcast and even to get out even farther than just our audience. So great. Thank you for that introduction, and let's get started. So in regards to livestock sustainability, just start us off by kind of going back to the basics about livestock biogas production. So we're going to talk about biogas production and it's in the realm of livestock sustainability. So give us the background or the basics so we can dig into that discussion a little bit.
So you want me to talk about biogas production, and let's start with how we actually produce biogas. Okay, so we generally produce biogas by having the animal manure contained in some kind of a capped environment. Okay, why do we have to do that? We have to do that because if we do want to produce biogas, we need microbes that do not like oxygen. Okay, these microbes are called methanogens. Some of them are protozoa. These microbes all have in common that they hate oxygen. That means we need to have the animal manure in an oxygen-deprived or anaerobic environment. So once we have that oxygen-deprived environment, let's say a digester, for example, that's the fancy name of what it is. Imagine a tank of sorts that's completely shielded from the outside world. Then these microbes that produce methane will multiply automatically, and they will become really the dominant type of microbes in that environment. And these microbes, just like you and I producing CO2 right now while we are speaking here, we are releasing CO2. These microbes that produce methane do produce methane continuously, and also some other gases such as hydrogen sulfide and so on. And all these gases that stem from the animal manure make up a gas mixture called biogas. And this biogas mixture is made up of things such as methane, but also some CO2, some hydrogen sulfide, some volatile organic compounds, and so on. I don't want to confuse the heck out of people, but just say biogas is not a name for just one gas, but it's a gas mixture. But the gas we are interested in is methane. And methane makes up 70% of biogas, 70, so the majority. And why do we care about methane? We care about methane because methane is pretty much pure energy. So you can burn methane, and you actually do it at home if you cook with gas or if you heat your home with gas. What you're using there is methane, okay? So what people call natural gas is methane. So back to our digester producing biogas. We are taking the biogas, we're cleaning the biogas up so that we have only methane resulting. And then the methane can be used in different ways. You can make it into fuel, transportation fuel to run buses or heavy-duty trucks. Or you can make the methane into power and pretty much electrify whole communities with it. So both of those avenues are being used. When farmers produce biogas, that biogas can either be made into power or it can be made into fuel. And we are seeing it in places like California, where this is happening at scale, at massive scale.
So you can essentially have, you know, a circle back to production on your farm from animal waste to producing fuel to drive the vehicles that are working on the farm, harvesting crops, et cetera, feeding the animals. So certainly a sustainability circle when it comes to kind of the livestock industry?
Yeah, you know, my parents passed away a few years ago, but they lived in a village, a very old village in central Germany. And that village had some crisis because people who moved there recently from cities, they like to live in the countryside. But what they didn't like was the smell of nearby farms. And so there was a real ag-urban conflict in that village. A university got involved and offered as a solution the construction of an anaerobic digester. And that digester then received all of the animal manure from the village, from all the farms, as well as all the food waste from all households and other biomass, such as newspapers and all the biomass generated in this village from urban and rural sources. And then this digester produced power because the biogas was burned, produced power, enough power to run the whole village off the grid. And when burning the biogas, it produced heat. And that heat was then used to heat up water, a water tank. And the heated water went through a pipeline system into every household, supplying each household with hot water. So the entire village got off the grid for power and heat through the use of an anaerobic digester that was run by the entire village. And as a result, all of those households, whether they were the normal households with people from cities originally or farmers, all worked hand in hand to get the job done. So it could be that kind of a model, or it could be a very different model like we have here in California, where you have dairies with 2,000-3,000 cows. All the manure is collected in a lagoon. The lagoon is covered, and then the biogas is cleaned up, made into transportation fuels, one of the main approaches in the state of California to achieve a 40% reduction, 40% reduction of methane in the state through the use of this one technology.
What a wonderful personal story that is about the village in Germany where your family was. It's really great. It sets the tone for how important this is and, you know, what a resource that we might be missing, right, in terms of agriculture.
You know, I am a great proponent of working with farmers and not ever against them, okay? We need farmers not just to grow the food we all eat, but we also need farmers for many other societal functions. And if farmers, in the way of growing food for us, also can provide utilities such as fuel and or power, then why wouldn't we use that resource? We need to incentivize that. You know, I have some people who criticize me for doing the job I do, and what they use as a way of criticizing me is to say, well, Midlerner works with the farming sector, as if that were something fishy. As if that were something fishy. If you ask me what one of the most noble things can be that I could leave behind as a legacy, it would be working with the farming sector. In my opinion, there are two critically important or strategically important sectors in society. The one is the health sector, and the other one is the food sector. We can't live without either one. And while the health sector, doctors, nurses, and so on, are hailed by most people in society, there are significant forces out there that harp on our farmers day in, day out, always look at the negatives, try to make their lives as difficult as can be, with rules and regulations, with fines and taxes, making the lives of our farmers miserable. Many farmers will tell you, I have enough. I do not want to be in farming anymore, and I certainly don't want my kids to be in farming. And I, with every fiber of my body, am working on reversing that trend and portraying farmers as who they are and what they do. And that is very important to me, and that's why it's very important to me, too, to talk to people like you.
Dr. Midlerner, you can see the passion in what you're doing and working for the farmers, with the farmers. And I appreciate it. I come from a farming family, grew up in Midwest Nebraska. My father was a farmer. My Grandfather is a farmer. His whole family were farmers. So absolutely understand the passion for agriculture. And it's very sad when we think about not getting the next generation involved in agriculture, that we're scared to do that because it's been rough socially and emotionally. And so I applaud you for what you're doing. And we need to come back as a group and community and work to get the importance, you know, out to the general public. So very much appreciate that.
I appreciate you saying that. I recently reviewed the USDA agricultural census for the United States, and I want to share a couple of numbers with you. We have a total of 2 million farms in the United States, according to the USDA census. 2 million farms. But of the 2 million farms we have, 1.5 million, so the vast majority, have an annual revenue of less than $25,000. Meaning these 1.5 million farms do farming on the side. Some people would call them hobby farmers, okay? Small farms that cannot make enough to support their families with it. So they do it on the side. Of the 2 million farms in the United States, a shocking low number of 80,000 farms produce 2/3 of all the food we all consume. I repeat that because it's that important. 80,000 farms produce 2/3 of all the food we all consume. And the average age of these 80,000 farmers is 59. They're nearing retirement age, 80,000 farmers. And these people now ask themselves, what do I do with my farm? Do I want my next generation, my sons and or daughters, do I want them to take over my farm? Or should I just call it quits? And I tell you what, more and more farmers use the latter. And that is of real concern to us as society, because what if that small number of people were to say, we are out of this, then we are in deep water. Okay? And so I want the public to become aware of what an important group of people that is, that farming community, and how imperative it is for us to support them to the greatest extent we can.
Absolutely. We need to get our young people back interested in ag and get some leadership with that generation of professionals to embrace agriculture again and take us into the next century. So absolutely. Well, we could do an entire podcast on that topic. And so maybe that's a good one for a later date. But let's jump back into the biogas production and as it pertains a little bit to the swine sector, right? So a lot of the information that I've read talks about cows and methane production in dairies. And so help us to look at that on a swine perspective, compare it to cattle, and then what do we, what's good about swine methane production and what's bad?
Yeah, so swine production, of course, is quite different with respect to being an emission source compared to cattle production. And dairy, let's say, or beef farms, beef ranches, they mainly deal with enteric emissions, meaning with the methane belched out by those ruminant animals. Our monogastric friends don't belch, so the methane doesn't come from the animal itself, but it comes from the animal manure. And most swine operations in the United States are indoors, meaning swine are in barns. Their manure falls through slatted floors into some manure containment underneath. And or from there, it goes to a manure storage, a pit, let's say, and there it's concentrated. So that manure that comes from the animals is stored in a pit or in a lagoon. And the really good news about this is that these facilities could be capped. Okay, so we could make it happen that the gases that stem from the animal manure will not go into the air and lead to odors, let's say, and to the release of gases like ammonia or hydrogen sulfide, but instead that we cap the manure storages, generate an anaerobic environment, which, as I said, is favorable for methane-forming microbes, and then produce this biogas. And then use that biogas to either run the farm off the grid entirely, and maybe even neighboring communities, or produce fuel, or do both, produce power and fuel. I think it's a very attractive undertaking, but it is one that surely would benefit from incentive support. Meaning, if in a place like Iowa or North Carolina or Minnesota or so, policymakers were to become aware that something that is often viewed as a liability, which is animal manure, could become an asset. If they were to understand that, they could really help by making some policy changes that incentivize the use of these technologies. Because oftentimes the initial investment of building a digester deter a farmer from making that investment. It costs some money, some initial capital, to put in a digester. And that's what might make some farmers shy away from using a technology like that. But I've seen many, many cases in which farmers said, no, I will make that investment. And after a few years, they will find that they broke even with it, and they become quite positive around it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that our swine industry is really... what do I want to say in the locations that you mentioned, right? It's very focused in location. And so, certainly those states, could find it very useful to put some policy. It's kind of like the ethanol production, right? And back in the early 2000s. So that maybe type of, policy makers to encourage it, is a great start.
You know, I think for a change, the other states of the United States could look at California, because for once our policy makers, our legislature has done something really well. They have, instead of using the cane approach of having rules and regulations, fines and or taxes used against farmers because these farms produce these greenhouse gases such as methane. Instead of using the cane approach, California decided to use the carrot approach of incentivizing technology use financially to reduce emissions, saying, if you reduce methane, we will give you a credit for it. We will financially incentivize it. And by doing so, our farmers, largely dairy, we have not much of a swine sector in California, but our farmers jumped onto it. They used this incentive, and we are now well on our way to strongly reduce this gas methane in the state of California. And we will achieve a full 40% reduction of this gas by the year 2030, simply because California decided we use a positive approach, an incentive-based approach. In other words, we use the carrot, not the stick.
Yeah, great example. Great example. So let's jump into just a little bit of the details here. Tell me about the carbon and nitrogen ratio and its importance in biogas.
So the carbon to nitrogen ratio differs greatly across livestock species and around what these animals are being fed. So it matters because dependent upon what that ratio is, the product that results, let's say, for example, compost, can become really good soil amendment. Okay, really good soil amendment. So, for example, if you have a carbon nitrogen ratio of 18:1 and you use manure as the nitrogen source and let's say some kind of straw so as a carbon source, if you mix these two at the right ratio, then you will maximize microbial growth. You will maximize the value of resulting compost, for example, and therefore the usefulness as a soil amendment to farmers. So in the case of compost, the carbon to nitrogen ratio is particularly important, okay? with respect to digesters, what's most important is the roughage content of what goes in, because roughage, other word for roughage is fiber, is what the microbes need in order to produce methane. The more roughage or fiber is in the waste stream, the more methane they will produce. So depending upon what you do with your manure, whether you compost it or whether you put it in a digester, you need to have some basic knowledge as to what the ideal ratios are and what you want to have in the resulting output, either the compost material or the digestate coming out of a digester. Because sooner or later, whatever you produce, whether it's a compost or whether it's a digestate, sooner or later, that material will go back onto some crop as a fertilizer and or soil amendment. And that's really important because you're not losing fertilizer value, let's say, of the digestate coming out of a digester compared to undigested manure that you would use if you don't have a digester. You have the same nutrients in the digestate that comes out of a digester as you would in undigested manure, but you do have some nutrients in a different form. For example, imagine two swine farms. One has a digester, the other one does not have a digester. Both of these farms produce manure, and the nitrogen to phosphorus to potassium ratio of the two farms will be roughly the same. But the form of nitrogen will be different. The digester farm will have more ammonia coming from what's coming out of the digester compared to the swine farm that does not have a digester. And that's simply because a digester favors certain pathways that make the nitrogen go into the direction of ammonia. Okay, so a digester will increase ammonia from what's coming out of the digester compared to a non-digester swine operation. And that's the challenge. Okay, so we must not just look at benefits of a digester, but if we have unintended consequences, we also need to look at those. And more ammonia is a consequence of using a digester. So if we are cognizant of that, if we know that, then that means we now have to pay more attention to when we land apply that manure stream from a digester. We need to apply it to crops more so than in a way where you don't have a digester, in what we call agronomic, in an agronomic fashion, meaning we have to apply the material coming out of a digester at a time that the crops can take it on. So applying the stuff at agronomic rates means we are applying the waste stream, the nutrient stream that comes out of a digester to the crops as fertilizer at the time that the crops are ready to take it on. Because if we don't do that, if we apply it at times when we don't have crops on the field, then that nitrogen will go into the air just like ammonia, okay? And that can affect air quality in different ways as a gas, but ammonia can also become a particle and therefore become something we call PM2.5, a fine particle affecting air quality.
So it's a timing issue. It's not necessarily a problem with no solution, but it takes a much more orchestrated process, it sounds like, to get it right.
Yes.
If you're using a digester.
And not just more management with respect to the land application of that material, but the actual digester also requires management. Okay. It's not as easy as to say we're just capping the manure storage and then we are producing biogas. But making biogas is almost like making beer or wine. It's a microbial process, and you have to keep those microbes happy, okay? If the microbes are not happy, then your biogas production can collapse. And then a digester can become a headache. So you have to understand that running a digester is doing something additional to just raising your pigs. Okay, you're now also running a power plant. You're now running a plant that produces a utility. And yes, you can monetize that utility. So you have a new income stream, but you also need to manage it and you need to be willing to do that. Or if you don't do it, if you don't want to do it yourself because it's too much of a headache, then you can work with companies that do that for a living. There are many digester developers who look for farmers who want to have a digester on their premises, and they will run it for you. They will build the digester. They will sell the stuff that comes out of it, the biogas, and they will keep the majority of the revenue, but they pretty much take care of your manure for you. That's a different model, but it's one that's being used.
You kind of have a, you know, it's an expert that's overseeing that area of the operation, not unlike you would have on the production side. It's not just something you can kind of do, part way. It sounds like it's, it's much more precise than that. And so you have to invest in some kind of resources, right, to put at it, whether that's outsourcing it or learning it as a different area of opportunity as a farmer. No, that's a great explanation.
And I've seen both models work well, but those farmers who want to do it themselves have to be aware that this is a investment, not just of finances, but also of brain power and patience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, excellent. So today we've been discussing biogas production with Dr. Frank Mittlerner, a professor at UC Davis and an expert in the area of livestock sustainability. If you have an interest in learning more, Dr. Mittlerner has a really great blog that you can access on the Clear Center UC Davis website. It's not only informative, but I appreciate the transparency and the genuineness. You listen to our podcast and see the passion that he has for this area. And so I encourage you to check that out. Dr. Mittlerner, do you have any final thoughts or take homes for our audience from today's conversation?
You know, I'm really encouraged that people want to know about topics like this. Biogas production is really a great example of how our farmers can do even more than what their number one objective is, which is producing food. They can even help us produce utilities, convert something that some people view as a liability, which is manure, and turning that manure into an asset, not just as a fertilizer, but also as a substrate that becomes power or fuel. I mean, how beautiful is that? You can take something that's an issue, a global challenge, which is methane, and by controlling that, by producing that gas, but managing it, and instead of letting it go into the air, managing it and putting it into fuel tanks to replace diesel, or producing power and powering whole communities. By doing this, we reduce methane in the atmosphere, and that reduces warming. So our farmers are one of the very few sectors of society that can not just be less of an issue, less of a contributor to greenhouse gases leading to global warming, but they can actually help reduce global warming. And most other sectors cannot say that. So let's continue working with and not against our farmers to get this and many other jobs done.
Excellent.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Vaxinova, formulate to your needs. Custom-made vaccines. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. Better production performance starts with Eastman Choline Chloride. Visit eastman.com. Optimize growth in baby pigs with Uniferon 200 iron dextrin from Pharmacosmos. Field studies have demonstrated 2 1-milliliter doses of Uniferon 200 can lead to a 7-pound increase at market weight, along with a 5% increase in average daily gain. 2 1-milliliter doses of Uniferon 200 are recommended to ensure enhanced growth and performance from weaning to market,
To learn more, visit us.uniferon.com/research.
So we're concluding our time together today. I want to say thank you to our listeners. And if you have questions or comments, send those through on your podcast platform. Also, if you liked our show today, please give us a thumbs up. And before we end, a trademark of our Swinet podcast is to ask our guest a few thought-provoking questions to expand our knowledge and keep us thinking. So, Dr. Mittlerner, what is a book or resource that you use as your go-to in your area of expertise?
I wish I could give you a simple answer to that, but my life is complex, and so are the sources of information that I lean on. As a scientist, my main source of information is the scientific literature, most of which would not be very easily digestible, no pun intended, but easily digestible to most of the listeners. But always be mindful that what you see on the internet can be put there by anyone, okay? Don't think just because you read something on the internet, there's a lot to it, okay? There's a lot of junk on the internet, so be mindful of who the sources are. And also be aware that there are many people who write about or produce any kind of outputs about animal agriculture who have a real deep agenda and who are driven by the thought of getting rid of animal agriculture, okay? So just be mindful of that. There's a lot of politics around the topic you are interested in, and you have to carefully be able to separate those who are cognizant and experts in the field and those who just simply have big opinions on it, but not very much expert knowledge.
Oh, absolutely. Self-proclaimed experts, right? Without the credentials for being the expert. Great advice. So what about a book or resource not related to the swine industry, or in your case, sustainability, that you recommend others to check out? Something interesting.
So I just read a book that really entertained me. It's called The Professor and the Madman. I don't know if you heard about it. It's really entertaining, but it's also just amazing. It's about a guy who literally lost his marbles and who greatly contributed to the production of one of the greatest pieces of literature. And I don't want to give it away, but I want to tell you, The Professor and the Madman are both a great book and a great film to watch and or read.
Yes. Well, I wrote it down and we'll check it out. Always fun to hear some of those types of books or movies that are interesting as a scientist, but a little different. So appreciate that. So the last one is, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
I think the most professional advice I can give is, don't think you know it all. We are all in the learning business, okay? We all can learn more. Use your ears, use your eyes, be open. And don't think you have already obtained all the information and that's it. But be willing to learn and be willing to listen. And put your just realize that people have differences in opinions, and that doesn't make them bad people. But try to put yourself into their shoes and try not to just argue for arguing's sake, but exchange your opinions in a respectful way. If somebody goes down and tries to be in the dirt or pull you in the dirt, don't play those games, okay? Just don't do it. There's an old saying, don't ever wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty and the pig will like it. Okay? So that's nothing against pigs, the opposite. But what I'm telling you here is don't entertain those mud wrestling exercise that some people want to impose on you, but always keep the high road and let them do their thing. You do yours and be professional, be polite. And if the other side doesn't want to be that way, then leave them alone.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, especially in a topic that's so controversial, or some people, it's personal, right? And that's not what it's meant to be. It's everybody can have an opinion, but I think just understanding and trying to be empathetic or understand somebody else's view is important. It can solidify your view, so there can be some benefits, but you also have to know when to walk away. So I think good advice.
As a parting thought, 98% of all refrigerators in the United States contain animal source foods such as meat, dairy, eggs, 98%. And that means there's only a very small amount of people in the country that opposes animal source foods and livestock and poultry and so on. So why don't you, if you are a farmer, just realize the majority of people is very open to animal source foods, is very open to farming, also open to livestock farming. And many of them want to know more about it. Okay, so share with them. But those who don't like animal agriculture, some people even hate animal agriculture, are not easily swayed by your arguments. Okay, and you just have to learn to separate the ones from the others. Some who do want to listen and learn from you, and others who just want to shout at you, you pick who you want to converse with.
Great advice. Thank you so much for being our guest today, and look forward to talking again at another time.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. So this concludes another episode of the Swine It podcast. Looking forward to the next show. Bye, everybody.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.